Tonight's talk is on reducing reactivity in life. So when we're reactive, obviously it means an event in life can cause us, and by the way, there's a couple of cushions available up front, so if you're sitting all the way in the back and you want to get near the air conditioner, feel free to join us up front. When we're reactive, we're easily tossed about by people, circumstances, situations. When we're reactive, we don't thoughtfully, calmly choose how to respond. We fall into immediate, fast survival coping skills, ones that we've hardwired into the mind. And very often, our survival coping skills that are the hallmark of our reactive behaviors, while they worked when we were children, they no longer look that good when adults act them out. For instance, running away or avoiding relationships the moment they become difficult. When we're kids and somebody acts challenging in a schoolyard, it's not that unattractive to run away at the first sight of trouble. However, in adult relationships, if the very moment they become challenging, we simply avoid, run away, hide, not come out to play anymore. Not only is it unattractive, but it leads to significant social impairments. So the Buddhists state that is not reactive is the wonderful state of upekkha, U-P-E-K-K-H-A, which means peaceful balance. And it's, in the Buddha's list, it's often left at the very last as the state closest to enlightenment. That state where the mind can hold, perceive, be with events in life without being stirred up. Now, when we think of this, the first mistake we might make is we might assume that not being reactive or being peaceful is a kind of numbness. And far from it. When we are equanimous, we feel all that is present. When we hear disappointing news, such as for many of us, the Zimmerman verdict, it doesn't mean that we sit there numbly. We can feel the sadness, the frustration, the surprise, the sense of the feeling of being let down by other people. We can feel those feelings in the body. We can feel what's present, but the difference between being stirred up and equanimity is there's always a part of the experience that's not subsumed, that's not swallowed up whole, that gives us perspective, that gives us enough calm, enough steadiness, that rather than acting out on the first impulse, we can thoughtfully choose how we want to respond, rather than simply throwing up our arms, rattling, stomping our feet. And we can still do this if we want. But if we're responding, we're always aware of other choices before we immediately get pushed around by the world. When we're reactive to pleasant news, we abandon all that's around us and we go off into these fantasies of how great life will be. If we're in the beginning of a new relationship, or somebody likes a painting of ours, or there's a new opportunity in life, and we hear about it, we tend to abandon all the rich sensations in the present moment, and we go off into these fantasies of how great it will be. Wow, I've just met Mr. or Miss Wright, and it's going to be fucking awesome. It's going to be great. And what we don't realize we're doing in those moments is we're basically shunting aside the present moment. Like parents who have a newborn baby and love it, and they sort of, oh, yeah, to the other child. We totally lose any sense that we can be happy, peaceful, relaxed, at ease right here and right now, because we're essentially relegating the present as just this conduit to get us to some imaginary time in the future when shit will be really good, when all our ducks will be in a row. On the other hand, when we are really pissed off by something that happens, we also lose the idea that we can be peaceful and at ease right now. We immediately fall into these behaviors that are completely built around the idea of getting rid of shit. Very often, the stuff that creates reactivity is stuff in life we have no power over, that we can't get rid of. We might not be able to get rid of our coworkers. We might not be able to get rid of our roommates immediately. We might not be able to get rid of an annoying sound on the street or some inconvenience. But the mind doesn't like that. The mind loves the belief that it can somehow get rid of anything that's uncomfortable. It's a learned behavior. There's a wonderful study I was reading when I was preparing for tonight that was done by the University of California and Notre Dame and Stanford. And they determined that people who are most reactive, the ones that are most tossed and turned and thrown off balance by events, are the ones that had the least secure attachments during childhood. They didn't believe that their caretakers, when they were infants, would take care of them. When an infant knows that they have a secure connection with a caretaker, at the first expression of discomfort, they will get acknowledgement from the mother, the caretaker, the father, whoever is present, the adult present. And there'll be some sense of reassurance. The parent might not necessarily get rid of the sensation that's causing the disturbance, but it will create a sense of reassurance. On the other hand, a child that doesn't have secure attachment over time develops more and more demonstrative, visible, very expressive, demanding flurry of activities to get attention. And as we go on through life, they associate stomping, flailing about, demanding, screaming to be a process that works. And eventually it becomes even internalized. But all of us have a level of reactivity. It plays out when there are negative things in a couple of different ways. The first and most obvious form is when we are reactive, we seek something that will soothe or get rid of, in our perception, the thing that's causing us tension. It's like a child playing hide and seek. We believe if we simply close off to it, it won't be there anymore. For example, some friend was telling me about their wonderful coping strategy for getting bills that they can't afford to pay. They shop. Because when you shop, you release dopamine. When you release dopamine, the mind's no longer aware of that bill you can't pay. I've done it too. I like saying you, it dissociates, or not misaligns. But we all, when faced with something we can't handle, at times fall into self-soothing strategies. Anything that releases dopamine, from shopping, gambling, sales, hunting online, Facebooking, texting, flirting, anything that raises the level of dopamine, simply for a little while gets rid of the stressor. Of course, the problem is that the stressors don't go away. They're still in our lives. We still have that bill. We still have the rent. We still have that thing we might need to apologize for, or that resentment about the way somebody's behaved, or that person who hasn't returned our phone call. Whatever creates the reactivity, we fall into a self-soothing behavior to make our awareness of the stressor go away. The second is, of course, we resist and we try to push away. This is only in a couple of situations in adult life. We generally don't tend to fall into this, but sometimes we lash out at people when we're irritated, when somebody's inconvenient. We might take it out on them by verbalizing aggressively, by creating some kind of aggression that's even at times unconscious or not fully conscious. More often what we do when there's a stressor or something that is a trigger of reactivity is we seek avoidance. Like children that hide from difficulties, we avoid unpleasantness. The problem, again, is that if we're trying to avoid something that's unavoidable, we're only adding more and more suffering to our lives. If it's somebody that's easy enough to avoid, it might not be the greatest strategy, but it probably won't cause that much suffering. But if we're trying to avoid somebody we work with by mentally making them go away, by trying to not hear them. I had a friend who was at war with somebody who sat literally in the same cubicle, literally 3 feet away. They would try to tiptoe in, though the other person was that close. And of course, finally, the probably the most prevalent form of reactivity is mental spiraling. Ideas of how bad it will be, this will never stop. Ideations about what we should do, counteracted by other ideas of, no, that's not a good idea, we can't kill them, back and forth. So you get it. This is all very familiar. So according to Buddhist Dharma, there are a couple of reasons why we fall into reactivity. The first is that we tend to see things that are very temporary as permanent. When we go to a new job, and the first day it's confusing, we don't know anybody, the tasks are unfamiliar, they were feeling judged, the mind can spiral out thinking, oh shit, it's always going to be this bad, I'm fucked, why did I take this job? Fuck me, this is terrible. This is extrapolating out the present as if it will never change. Of course, we do experience constant change all the time. When we think about changing conditions, we tend to assume that the Buddha was talking about the world is changing, and certainly the world is changing, but primarily the motor of change or dynamicism in our perceptions is us. We can actually habituate to far more than we ever imagine. The brain is, in fact, partially a habituating machine. It can get used to incredible difficulties. The problem is we don't give ourselves the credit that we deserve. I once moved into an apartment that was in the East Village many years ago, and for the first few weeks, I was completely thrown by how loud it was. And I extrapolated outwards, oh, I'll never be able to go to sleep, and the drama in my head played out for a couple of days. And then, soon enough, after a while, what happened was, while I wasn't noticing it, my mind became habituated to all the noise until finally I didn't hear it. And friends would come over and they'd say, hey, this is a loud apartment. I wonder how you sleep. But I had habituated to it entirely. I had no problem falling asleep at all. We tend to, in situations in life, when faced with challenges, faced with difficulties, faced with changes at work, we tend to immediately assume that it will make our lives unbearable, difficult. And we tend to forget just how adaptable we are. Another factor is that we don't play the behaviors all the way through to the end, our reactive coping strategies all the way to the end. For example, an alcoholic faced with some stressful insult at work will immediately go out to drink because he knows that the alcohol will, as a neural inhibitor, make the insult go away. He won't think about it. He won't think about the person who insulted him. But the alcoholic won't play the tape all the way through to the very end. He won't realize, well, sure, I won't think about the insult for the rest of the evening, but then I'll wake up the next day with a fucking miserable hangover, and that asshole will still be at work, and the insult will still be playing itself in the mind. All it's done is delayed feeling the frustration and disappointment at the insult. All it's done is it's covered over the wound. It's not helped it heal at all. And it's made our lives more difficult. The same way with all of our coping strategies that are not skillful. When we play the tape all the way through, we see, wow, avoidance doesn't solve anything. It simply makes it more and more awkward the next time I run into somebody that I don't feel that comfortable with. Or avoiding a topic doesn't smooth over something with another human being. It simply makes it more difficult to actually verbalize and talk and communicate and share and open. So when we play the tape all the way through, when we actually observe in the long term what happens in our coping strategies, our reactivity, our ingrained automatic actions, we see that they don't serve us. Another way that makes us needlessly reactive is when we take life personally. We tend to assume when somebody acts unskillfully that they're doing it to us. The idea that they probably do that to everyone doesn't cross the mind. We tend to assume that our fear, our sadness, our disappointment, our anger, our frustration is unique. And so we don't share and see that, in fact, they're simply the inevitable feelings that arise in life. The more we take our feelings and our experiences personally, the less we feel we can reach out, the less we hear the experiences of others that show us that these experiences are survivable, the less we understand that we can get wisdom from others. So it's very important to undermine that practice of taking anything personally. Locate always the universal in our experience. Another important reflection, and I'm going to talk soon about the tools that help us get out of reactivity, but is when we lose track of our mortality. Most of us as adults are aware that we're going to die, but we don't hold that in our conscious thoughts. And believe it or not, one of the core Buddhist practices is the five reflections, is simply reciting, I'm of the nature to grow old, to become sick, to die. All that is dear to me, I will be separated from, and I am the recipient of my actions. That which is skillful will result in my happiness. That which is unskillful will result in my suffering. Now, this might sound like a real bummer, but it's actually the exact opposite. A while back, I was working at a job where I had a coworker that was a micromanager and to an extreme degree that I'd never anticipated. This was probably about 19 or 20 years ago. And they, I thought I was already decent at what I did for a living at that time, but they, for some reason, hired me and then decided to change the way I did everything. Would sit over me and sort of criticize everything. And I thought, oh my God, I can't bear this. This is the worst fucking job ever. Why do they hire me? My pride was insulted. My sense of having any skills were insulted. And I felt just every 8 hours there just felt like, you know, something out of a Solzhenitsyn book on torture. And so the best thing that happened to me in that period was I went to this new dentist and I opened my mouth and I actually have a very common growth in my mind, my mouth called a torus. It's just a bone growth. It's perfectly harmless. But for some reason, this was the only fucking dentist in the world that hadn't been shown a torus in his training. I opened my mouth, the guy practically fainted. And he said, oh my God, you've got this huge growth. We've got to get you for a biopsy immediately. This is, you know, he was sweating and pale. Like, everything that you're not supposed to do when, you know, you think somebody's got a huge, you know, life-threatening. So seeing his absolute horror, I too became a little concerned. And so for the next few days, when I immediately thought, oh my God, this might be it. I might have a huge, I might have to, you know, I have a tumor the size of a basketball in my head. You know, they're going to have to remove my face. This is it. It was actually the most calming time because I go to that job and everything that person said didn't matter at all. It was just fine. I'll do whatever. It didn't matter. None of it had to do with my experience of those last few days of my life. My joy at breathing and being present, and it wouldn't matter. I realized, my God, this is just a minor blip, and as soon as I get the diagnosis, I'll quit, and I'll spend the rest of my time in, you know, the park. Whatever. But actually, when we carry this recognition that we are limited beings, that there will come a time when we will look back on life, we ask ourselves, will this shit fucking matter? In those exact same words. Most of the little stuff that creates reactivity will find no longer pushes us around. We can stay present with it because we realize that it won't be that which we look back on. I've been fortunate to do hospice work. I've been fortunate to be part of a hospice training organization. And I guarantee you that when you are around those people that are in hospice care, they don't remember or think about the myriad of disappointments that in their lives earlier caused a flurry of activity. The only thing they express is a wish that they didn't get so anxious and stirred up by life, because almost all the shit, and this is what everybody says in hospice, didn't matter. But when we forget our mortality, we can very easily begin to think that little shit matters. Little shit like an inconvenience, an insult, somebody being difficult, something not going our way, a frustration, a setback. Somebody doesn't like our song. So what? It won't matter. So some of the tools that make it easier beyond keeping in mind the changing quality of our perception, our ability to habituate and remember that that which is difficult right now, we will attune to remind ourselves of the inevitability of facing bigger issues, aging, sickness, death, loss. Does this situation I'm dealing with really fucking matter that much? We can also use the wonderful spacious mind to our benefit. If there's a large body of water and we throw a rock into it, it'll only make a small ripple that will disperse. But a small puddle, if we throw a rock into it, it will completely shatter all the water. Likewise, when the mind is very small and just focusing on one thing, we can be very stirred and thrown about by it. But if we always maintain larger awareness, we can not fall into reactivity. If we have a setback in our career, it's worth reflecting on all the other things we have in life that are worth feeling a sense of gratitude for. Bringing to mind consciously the people that care about us, the relationships that matter, our creative lives, the joy that we get when we are in contact with those we love, our spiritual practice. Likewise, it's also important to keep the mind spaciously in touch with all the other sensations that are available right now in the present. If I have a thought of, oh my God, tomorrow's gonna suck, and that thought doesn't want to go away, then fine, allow it to be there. Say hello. Hi, really dour, dark, repeating thought about how tomorrow's going to suck. Just keep, though, the mind in touch with all the other sounds, the body sensations, the breath, calming the body so that the mind can get some perspective and distance from the story about tomorrow. Don't resist it. Don't feel the need to get rid of it, because that creates reactivity. Just allow it to be there and keep the mind spacious around it. Sounds are one of the most useful tools. In some of the most threatening situations in life, if we simply can stay present with the sounds, we can keep the mind larger than whatever is occurring that creates fear. I also think that having, probably to conclude also, the most important tool is the meditation practice, the daily practice. There's lots of studies that show that over the course of 8 weeks, the mind literally starts, through neuroplasticity, de-triggering the fear mechanism of the brain, the amygdala, that causes our reactive spirals, our thought spirals, our fear, our repetitive ingrained thoughts. They've shown that literally in 8 weeks, the amygdala stops firing as much. Likewise, we also neurally wire axons from the frontal lobe over to the limbic system that stops us from falling into these reactive spirals. So at the very least, if you don't want to practice any of the other reflections, noting how much change there's going on, noting the impermanence of all conditions, giving the mind credit for habituation, reminding ourselves that there are other things worth being grateful for, keeping the mind spacious, just simply having a practice where each day, for 20 minutes, you step outside of the storyline, the drama, the narrative in the mind, and you simply teach the mind not to react, to simply reside peacefully. Just that will be a terrific step in the right direction. So I thank you for listening. I hope that tucked in there somewhere, there was something of value worth your reflection. If any of those who choose to leave could remember to help us out with the rent, I'd be very grateful, because we're just barely making it. And at this point, we're going to go to shares and questions. So I thank you for your contributions. Hi, Owen Beck.